I think you can end up finding you're sliding into a sense of indifference and apathy because you're not seeing. And when you find yourself in that place, often you're in a place of isolation. And this is a massive challenge. And again, I've just come from hosting the session, and Leon and Shireen were talking about this in the session. You know, leadership is that long walk of leadership is sometimes a lonely one and a challenging one. We often talk about the dangers that the sheep face in John chapter 10, and Jesus talks about that. And we talk about the sheep that live on the fringes of the flock, you know, and how dangerous it is for the sheep to live on the fringes of the flock. But I've learned that there are dangers for shepherds who live on the fringes of a flock, for shepherds who don't have a shepherd, for shepherds who don't have someone in their world who can support and resource them. Ultimately, those shepherds who live in isolation from the good shepherd himself, but also others around them. Again, in that book I mentioned earlier, H3 Leadership, Brad Lomonick, I think his name is, says every leader runs the risk of quarantining himself or herself in an ivory tower. Evaluate your own level of isolation by surveying the number and quality of relational connections in your life. Lone Ranger leaders are destined for trouble. But John Maxwell says in 360 Degree Leader, there are no Lone Ranger leaders. Think about it. If you're alone, you're not leading anybody, are you? Jesus never was alone in anything he did. At the very least, he had three key people around him. And when we go right back to the beginning of humanity and the creation of humanity, God himself said to us in Genesis 2:18, it's not good that the man should be alone. I'll make a helper fit for him. And the very essence of creation is a picture of even the Trinity, that Father, Son, and Spirit live in glorious interdependence and connection, no isolation. Jesus says, I only ever do what I see the Father doing, or I only ever say what I hear the Father saying. I'll send another, and actually in the Greek of that, I'll send another of the same kind. The Spirit is just as I am. I often think of that passage where Jesus says to his disciples, guys, I'm going to leave you. I'm moving on. It's not good for you if I stay. And they must have thought, how on earth is that possible? But if you think about it, as Jesus ascends, and just a matter of 10, 14 days later, the Spirit comes, the one who carried physical form, who was either in Jerusalem, Jericho, or Nazareth, sends the one who's with every single one of us. So we're not isolated in any way. I found this article in a journal called Evangelical Focus Europe. And this guy, Jeremy Peckham, says, a clue to why so many leaders feel isolated and lonely is found in a survey carried out by the UK Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches, where half of those surveyed reported that they didn't have a friend in ministry who could help them to recharge their batteries. Putting it into a business or organisational leadership context, leaders that feel isolated and lonely typically don't have a mentor, coach, or peer with whom they can share and be honest. And I think as leaders, we can guard against any looming temptation to prefer seclusion. I'm by nature an extrovert. My wife is by nature an introvert. I like company. I enjoy company. When Amanda is away, I don't like being on my own. I'm not very good on my own. I've always known that about myself as an individual. The older I get, I like a little bit of space, but I like to know there's company. So it's helpful if my daughter's at home and not out working and she's around the house. And that's a very honest, I just like a bit of company, and I will go looking for that. But not everybody is wired like that. But I've also learned as I've got older that when I'm struggling, I internally isolate. I could be with people. I could be with Amanda, but I internally isolate, and she knows me better than anybody and has observed that, because isolation is not just an external thing. It can be an internal thing. In James 5:16 in the Message, it says this, make this your common practice. Confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you can live together whole and healed. So the key question really is, who are you connected with and able to talk to when you need emotional, spiritual, or psychological support, Ishbel?
Yeah, so I think that this is the key question, isn't it? You know, when you're looking at this and you're thinking about it, who are you connected with? And if you're not connected, why? When you were talking about being an extrovert and enjoying being around people, I'm very similar to you, Stuart. I love being around people. But sometimes it can be an avoidance tactic, because when we're around lots of people, we don't actually have to talk about the deeper stuff. Mm. And when we actually sit one-to-one having a coffee with somebody that we know may look at us and ask us uncomfortable questions like, how are you really? We can become avoidant of that. So I think, you know, we have to question that within ourselves. And then also, why? Why are we avoiding? Is there shame there? Is there fear? Is there a lack of priority? This is about prevention. Whenever I do these workshops and talk to people, my passion is prevention. It's not dealing with the actual crisis. You know, we talk now as mums, don't we? When we do the ironing ready for the week ahead with the children, we talk about paying forward. We pay forward so our week is much easier and our lives are much easier. This is about paying forward. Looking after yourself and your well-being enables you to function, and part of that is making time for these conversations. And when people say, well, I don't really have the time because I'm so busy and I'm doing this, that and the other, you don't have the option. You need to make the time. You have to make the time, because what I'm seeing is an influx of ministers that are burning out because they haven't made the time. They're exhausted. They have ended up in situations or feel the burden of responsibility. So make the time and find the people.
Yeah. So our aim was to unpack this sense of accountability, not as this kind of very top-down authoritarian idea, but very much a relational peer idea. And it's a very different way of looking at things. And I've reflected on, there's probably four or five friends I have that they're all kind of actually in Ealing ministry, who I would say are very close to me that I would talk to. And they offer very different things. If I mention the names, and some of you who here would know them and would say, oh yeah, I can see they're very different. But I've observed that that's happened very naturally over years. And they offer very different things in some senses. And I think that we want to create that picture. And our heart, really, as we journey forward in this message and this whole culture of well-being, is that we don't see it top down. And that's where myself as director of ministry, working with Ishbel, who's working with our regional leaders, we realise when we've got over 700 active ministers in our movement, we don't have the resources top down that we can cope with all of that. What we want to do is to build this sense of we're here to help one another, which after all is the biblical concept, the body of Christ, whether that's the body of people who are in Ealing ministry or whether you as a leader in your setting or you know others, that we feel that. But I think it starts with that ability to be honest and real that we're going to need help at some point. One of our desires was to leave enough time. We've only got 20 minutes. I don't know what your name is, young man down here on the right, but could you help me? So if I give you my microphone, because you're fitter and younger than I, maybe you could run around and Ishbel and I will share her microphone for anybody who wants to ask a question so they can be heard.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen down there with his hand.
Okay. Let's go.
Thank you. So my question is, so I'm looking at it from the conversation on blind sports. And you talked about the importance of being vulnerable. Now, I want to know, so how, as a minister or as a leader in my church, how would I reconcile the importance of being vulnerable and, if you like, the theology of faith confession? So, for instance, in Joel 3:10, let the weak say, I am strong. So where do I stand in the scheme of things?
Yeah. No, I'm happy. I think you've raised two important points. I think there is a theological challenge. If your theology tells you the leader has to be powerful, strong, never wrong, never weak. A friend of mine once said to me, Simon Foster, said to me, Stuart, everybody wants their leaders to be vulnerable. They just don't want them to be weak. But Paul says, actually, it's only in my honest weakness that I find God's great strength. And I think the problem is the expectation. We think, and sometimes it's true, that people expect us as leaders to always be 100% charged, at 100% ability. Well, they need to wake up, smell the coffee, and look in the mirror. Because I still am a human person with the call of God in my life. And part of that is for us, and I'm happy in my position and my role, to say to you, as a national leader in Elim, I get it wrong. I'm a weak, frail man who depends every day on the Holy Spirit to not mess it up, to not mess my marriage up, to not mess my personal sanctification up. I cannot do it without the Holy Spirit every day. I think that makes me a strong leader. I learned many years ago, strong leaders say sorry. That the greatest leaders are not those who shout the loudest, but those who think the clearest. And I think it is a theological thing in some settings that we actually need to say that servant leadership, you know, Jesus was not so worried about getting down and washing his disciples' feet. Had Jesus been worried about being seen to be weak, he never walked the Via della Rosa with a cross on his back. And so I think that you quote a very good scripture. If we can think in our minds that actually great strength is awareness of our weaknesses, that great weakness is ignorance of our weaknesses, I think that's critical for any leader. And if I've learned anything over the years, it's being aware of my frailties and weaknesses and going before the Lord and sometimes weeping before him, saying, why am I doing this? Because I don't deserve this opportunity. Is actually when I feel so weak, Paul says, I've never been as strong, because it's only in that moment I'm relying upon him. And actually, true weakness is when I think I can do it without him.
Anything to add?
No? Okay. Yes.
Hi. I just wanted to add about that vulnerability. When you were speaking about it, I remembered my own background. I was a personal development person in the organisations I worked for, so I learned about the importance of self-examination and find out who you are and all that. And then when I began to pastor, I was quite open and vulnerable at the pulpit, but I came from a church that was strongly old school Caribbean, and so I was criticized for airing my dirty laundry. And over the years, I've been really pleased to see where we are today, to have a forum that we can sit and be open about discussing the power of leadership in being vulnerable. Because it's not that you air your dirty laundry. It's the fact that you learn how you communicate your vulnerabilities and weaknesses. And over the years, I've found that people have become stronger in areas where I've ministered because I've been vulnerable. It's helped them become somebody. So it's definitely nothing to be afraid of. And I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudette. Appreciate that. Anybody else got a question? Or you might, as Claudette, want to add something to what we're talking about?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for what you've shared. My question is really about relationships, really, and in terms of elders supporting their pastors. What is the best way to go about this? Because, you know, it's one thing for the pastor to offer support to the congregation, but it can be quite awkward when the person who should be offering the support actually needs support from the eldership or the congregation.
So I think it's about initially asking that question, isn't it? What do you need support with? So having that clear conversation with your leader as an elder, what do you need support with? And being quite direct about it. Because if someone says, oh, I don't need any support, then we know that they might not be being quite as open and honest about their vulnerabilities. And then when we're understanding what support they need, how do we give that support? I think it's really important to have clear conversations with people, because what I may need support with and how I may need support is going to be very different to each and every one of you. And where we go wrong is when we make an assumption that we can meet other people's needs the way that we want our needs to be met. We fail miserably. So having an understanding of where can we support, how can we support, is really important. But I also think, I go back to this time and time again about communication. How do you want to be communicated with? If I have a problem or a query or an issue, what's the best way to communicate with you? When am I going to get the best out of you? Is it going to be via email? Is it going to be via a phone? Is it going to be sitting in your living room having a coffee? I think those kinds of conversations are really important, because that's how we build a relationship. It's not necessarily intuitive when you're in the role of an elder, because it's a new thing and it's a new relationship.
Thank you for sharing, Johnny. Thanks for sharing some of the things that we can do to pay forward and things that we can kind of put into practice to help keep us healthy kind of in the future. But for anybody who maybe has come to the room today that's already in a place of burnout, what would you advise for how they move forward? Because they might have come here today already just holding on, but feeling that they're in that place.
Yeah, so see me afterwards and let's have a conversation. Anybody, it is fantastic if you're recognising that you're burning out. Most people I see that sit in front of me and I can see that they've burnt out don't even recognise it, because it's been such a long-standing issue that that's just who they are. So if you're seeing it, I would say that's probably quite a good thing. But there's provisions and the support that ELIM have put in place that we can offer. And please come and have a conversation if you're feeling like that.
Just to come on the back of that, I think the one thing I'd want to say is you are not less than anybody else because you recognise that. I would say it takes great courage. I remember in 2014, I remember it vividly, going back from conference and saying to Amanda, I don't know what's the matter with me. And I remember going fishing. She said to me, Stu, go fishing. It's one of my hobbies, go fishing. Have a day, Stu. I went fishing. I love going fishing in the summer. Sometimes, even if I don't really catch many fish, I just love the relaxation of it. And I just sat on the bank crying. Oh, what's the matter with me? I remember I went home and I got my iPad out and I'm searching, you know, Christian responses to burnout. Why don't, you know, whatever. And I came across a book called Leading on Empty by Wayne Cordiero. And I just began to read. And I realized I was in that kind of... Now, this was... We're going back, you know, 10 years or so now. But I was able to put some things in place. I think I was probably... Actually, a few weeks after that, we had a two-week holiday for our 25th wedding anniversary. And we were actually... be saved for many years to go on a cruise. And the one thing was, we were at sea for 3 days and my phone didn't work. Those 3 days saved my life, I think. So I just had to put it in the safe in the cabin. And I just walked. Amanda would be sitting reading. I was walking. I didn't know what to do, because I think one of the things, you know, I find myself on edge. I think burnout doesn't mean I want to sleep all the time. I'm on edge. I get restless. I recognise restlessness inside of me. I say there's no peace in my soul. I say to myself, I don't feel peace in my soul. And I know that I've got to do something about that. So I would say, if you're a minister, therefore, you know, we kind of work together and we're colleagues together, well done for acknowledging. And please step forward, because there's no celebration when somebody, you know, disappears out of their calling because they didn't feel they could say something. All the celebration is when we can find a way through and continue to grow. So thanks for asking the question, Johnny. Anybody else? A couple down here, please.
This is just a comment, but it's one of my bees in my bonnet, so can I just share it?
Please do.
Do you think we should, as ELIM, encourage ministers to have two mobile phones, one for church and one for personal use? So that when we do have a day off or go on holiday, we put the one in the cupboard or give it to your assistant. Because I've just come across so many people who just have the one, and I just think it's a really bad idea, and I have two. So, and I'm just making a suggestion, I just think it's healthy.
Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, I think that we, practical solutions like that, I think what Rachel's question identifies that I know is a problem for me, because there's a Welsh voice that tells me regularly it's a problem for me. She's sitting down there. There is no escape. I have everything that's on my computer is accessible on here. Because Elim International Centre, we have a thing called OneDrive. Everything. And so there is no escape. And so I think you raise an important point, Rachel, a practical point. What you raise probably that's even more significant than the great practical suggestion is the awareness of the challenges of not finding that space. I think you could comment on that.
Yeah, I think practical solutions are so important, because people will say to me, well, I can't do it because of this, I can't do it because of that, I can't do it because my phone goes off and it's my personal phone. So finding those solutions is important, but it's also the why behind it. I always ask the why. Why are you looking at your phone? What's the reason? What's the anxiety? Why do you feel like the sky will fall in if you aren't on hand to pick up that email? What is it about you that makes you feel so responsible for what you're doing? And is it a situation that you've created, or is it something that's happened? Because when we know the why, that's how we actually can really deal with the solution, because it's actually usually a lot more embedded in somebody, that need to be on hand, that need to be responsive, where someone's worth is, and then it becomes a shackle.
Yeah. I've been happy that these sort of conversations have been happening for a while now, because I think the culture that we have in church has been there for a long time, but it also filters down to the congregation, so how they deal with their issues. And I wonder whether there's an aspect of when people come to us in ministry, how we deal with them is how we're dealing with ourselves. And so we are trying to correct something in them, share something, put it right, fix it. That's how we feel we have to do ourselves. Just pull yourself together. Just get, you know, find an answer to this. Go on. But in actual fact, some of them will be weak in our congregation and will be struggling. And that doesn't make them sinners. That doesn't make them wrong. But if there's something about a culture needing to change. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah, and I also think there's it's an opportunity, isn't it? We mirror how we behave to those around us. You mirror to your congregation how you healthily respond to the difficulties in life. You mirror by putting boundaries in place. If you say to somebody, this is the parameter of when I'm available, that's healthy. That's not unavailable. That's healthy, because when you put a parameter around yourself and you say, I'm available at this time on these days, what you're also saying is that's when I'm going to be the best I can be for you. If I speak to my patients in the times that I am working in my office, I am switched on, I've probably got a cup of coffee next to me and I've probably eaten and I'm focused. If I was available 24/7, and they tried me outside of those hours, they're not going to get me at my best. I'm going to be doing them a disservice. So it's a false economy, this feeling of I've got to be constantly able and available. It's when you are at your best and when you're going to give the most quality. But I think that mirroring healthy responses is important, and also seeing people's weaknesses and issues is also important for ourselves, and recognising that, like you just said.
Stuart, can I just come off the back of what was said down here just about the burnout? I know that you guys have stuff in place that as pastors we can phone. Sometimes that's difficult whenever you're going through stuff to pick up a phone. Is there anything that you guys can do to be more proactive? I know, like for me, that someone has to physically drag me, sit me down, and pull it out of me. I'm not that forthcoming with the information of what I'm going through. And I know that I sat last year with you guys and you were saying, right, we're doing this, this, and this. It's now a year later and I have yet to see what I know, that and I know the heart behind it and I love it and it's what's needed. You know, we've agreed on that there. But is there anything more proactive that you guys could do to say, okay, you know what? Pastors maybe aren't going to phone us. What can we do to grab hold of them and to sit them down and say, what's going on with you and how can we help?
Yeah, I absolutely hear you. And I recognize things can often move at a pace that's not ideal. I think that one of the things I'd say, Ishbel will want to comment in a moment because we were having a chat about this morning. I think we're trying to deal with the awareness in the first instance, which in itself, Jonathan, is one of the greatest challenges we face. And I think that the challenge is greater in our own structures as an organisation, as a movement, because we've been embedded in a mindset like most Christian Pentecostal organisations have. So I think that, and I know that the stuff is starting to, you know, it's starting to seep into Northern Ireland, that Ishbel was over recently, and Dean were over with Edwin, looking at how they can do that. I think in the first instance, we're trying our best to get the message out that says, please don't, I know we've known each other a long time, but please don't be afraid to pick up that phone. But I also understand, because I've been in ministry, even if it's somebody at the other end that you think they're going to understand, it's a massive leap. I think one of the ideas that we maybe want to trial at some point is there a possibility of some kind of contact point that's not an authority figure as a first point of contact? And I think that's what we've talked about, wanting to explore what would that look like. I don't think we've got all the answers on that at the moment yet, but it's for a lot of people who aren't ministers, there's a psychology, I think, that comes from being a minister that we're trying to get beyond, and that's a journey. And that's an individual thing, because, you know, I wouldn't have classically many years ago been one of those people that immediately bought into that. There are some people who, the way they're wired and the way they are, they're probably better than I am in so many ways, that they would instantly say, I'll ask for help, but some of us don't. We've grown up in an environment. I'm open, continually open, to how you can help feedback that to us. But I think what we do know is we recognise the challenge of how do we create those connection points, contact points. Now, that may need to be something that's independent from authority structures, even though those of us in those positions think, hey, we're approachable, we're accessible, look, I'm a nice guy. I know that's not enough because I'll still be on that top table in 15 minutes' time. And those pictures still retain for people. I don't know if, Ishbel, you want to say something before we finish on.
Yeah, so I was just interested in which area you were in, because they are everywhere now. So, yeah, and 4th of June is when it's starting in your area. I think that the challenge that I would say is, if you know where your weak spots are, then that's something that needs to be worked on. So if you're saying that you find it difficult, or anybody finds it difficult to sit down or to pick up that phone, how do you exercise that muscle? How do you start to become more self-aware and more comfortable with doing the thing that you feel most uncomfortable with, that is going to support and enable you? And that is what these workshops do. It creates an awareness. We talk about things, it prompts things in people's minds and people chew it over. But I think it's a responsibility. If you see it as a difficulty, how do we move that forward? But there is also an ability, if you ever wanted to contact me directly, confidentially, people can do. And I'm under no authority of the NLT.
No. And actually, that's something Ishbel communicates in the wellbeing seminars, that she will be a point of contact. It's very difficult for me to project to you how much she gives to us as a movement for so little reward in terms of, for her and Dean, in terms of that they're incredible servants to us. But I hopefully you'll start to pick that up in the Irish context very, very soon. Folks, our time has run. I think Ishbel might be happy to linger for a moment, but please excuse me if I don't, because I'm required in another venue. But we're so grateful for you and for everything you are. And please, if we can help you, do get in touch. God bless you.